Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Welcome to it. It's midweek. As you get ready for Northern Illinois, Nebraska, Chris Schmidt, Danny Burke, it's Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Hope you're doing all right. Get to plenty of topics. I will eventually let go of this Black Friday thing 24 hours later. Lost my mind on it yesterday. Now I'm seeing the other side of the coin. We'll explain about that in a minute. You'll hear from Bob Diaco after practice last night. Some sound from Bobby D on his defense and 40 years of football coverage for Nebraska football. Of course, that's Mike Babcock. Babbers going to be with us in about 20 minutes, less than 20 minutes. Get his thoughts on the Black Friday decision for the future. Get his thoughts on Nebraska football after two games as they head into this final non-conference showdown. It is Wednesday, which means it's Wilderness Ridge Golf time. And Mike Shuhart, Shuey will be in studio. Get caught up with him. Hour two, college football thoughts from Brad Edwards, ESPN Insider. College game day and, of course, ESPN.com. Brad Edwards with us in 1 hour. A jock doc on tailback many of you fantasy owners have and are weeping that you will not have for about 2 months. Question out there on BTN, and it's something we'll dive into here, is the Nebraska defense, is it at a crossroads? ? Is that too dramatic? I used to like the Crossroads songs from Bone Thugs and Harmony 100 years ago. But you hear a song one too many times, you turn into the Doors and you don't want to play Light My Fire ever again, okay? So Crossroads might be too big of a question. But really, when you look at this opponent in Northern Illinois, Mike Riley's comments on Monday, some of Bob Diaco's insight to where his defense is at that you'll hear in a little bit, that's a fair question out there. Okay, are you going to get better? Maybe. How soon will you get better? I don't know. What does better look like? I mean, there's 100 different questions to answer for Nebraska at 11 o'clock against a MAC school. Where are you at after this non-conference? Are you a team that is going to be giving up 39 and 530? And are you going to be a team that gives up 39 points on average and 530 yards to spread teams? But man, you're good against those pro styles that don't have quarterbacks that are a threat to throw the football. We'll see. And right now, it's about continuing to keep the faith for Nebraska defensively, not just for the fan base, but also the guys that are lining up and trying to go win every Saturday. How soon will that happen? Well, here is Bob Diaco, and here is Bob Diaco's thoughts on one of many ills. Okay, what are we talking about when we look at warts? You're talking about third down percentage conversion at 52.5%. What are you talking about when it comes to the points per game? 39. You might get a ton of yards because stats aren't important, but what's the point total? 39 through two games. You're giving up a 40 spot. A lot of that had to do with Oregon. A lot of it had to do with Arkansas State. And then what's Northern Illinois do to you on Saturday morning? Lastly, sacks. Is this defense going to be built to help out the back seven? They're about containing big plays and scoring opportunities. You got to earn it. You got to chop wood all the way down the field, right? Well, yeah, theoretically. Have they? No, you've had a lot of teams put some big plays up on you. More so Oregon than Arkansas State. Does Northern Illinois find success? So, interesting question on BTN about crossroads? Is the defense at a crossroads? And I think yes is the answer, because if you don't kind of fix some of those leaks, those holes in the boat, then I think this could teeter your confidence moving forward, and you're going to face better and better opponents moving forward this season. Pass rush, though, over 100 attempts by quarterbacks in two games, one sack. Is that a product of not having anyone crush the pocket, smoke the quarterback, or the defense you're in? If you're just rushing three against five linemen, it's a little bit of both, but Bob Diaco asked about the pass rush. Is it being emphasized? Can it be better as you move forward this season?
Yeah, no. We're doing everything we can to try to help facilitate, you know, a growing, maturing, developing coverage. And that's a balance of some pressure and some four-man rush and some three-man rush. These offenses are built, find the ball. You know, it's like a shell game. Who's got the ball? These offenses are built to create a lot of misdirection and a lot of problems in rushing the passer. You know, they don't take a lot of negative plays, these offenses, this style of offense. They get the ball out very fast. It's most of it is off of play pass. So the front is playing run. It is what it is. It's different when the rule, it's different even as it was, you know, 5 years ago. Defending in 17 is very different than defending in even just in recent history because of the change in rule where the offensive linemen can run off the line of scrimmage. So a lot of the plays look like runs. So it's not like you're into a pass rush mode until the critical situation elicits, you know, a third down and long or an end of game.
Okay, he hit on the run-pass option. You've heard Coach DiNardo talk about the run-pass option. As an offensive coordinator, you love the run-pass option. If you're a defender, you hate the mobile quarterback that has a good arm and on a broken play or extending a play, torches your defense for a big gain, a first down, a game-winning touchdown. Listen, there is truth in the run-pass option and how offenses are designed. Part of your reasoning for the hire and the shift is to stymie and match up better against spread offenses, be versatile against spread offenses, dictate to them, have your own answer and counter against some of these formations. Now, from the run-pass standpoint, you look at defenses and they talk about, well, you got to read your keys, right? I think it's fair to acknowledge that you really have fewer keys to read if you're a defensive player. You just do. You're looking at what's the offensive lineman going to do. Okay, my eyes tell me this. Oops, he's throwing it. He's not running it. And by the way, he's throwing it in 2 seconds. It's out of his hands. Now, you could argue if you get enough great personnel on the same page in a system for years, and let's highlight Clemson here. They just took on the mother of all run-pass option teams in Auburn last weekend. How'd they do? 6 points, 74 yards, 11 sacks. That's Clemson. Nebraska nowhere near Clemson, but can they get better this week? Again, the crossroads question, and I think it is important. I think it is important to come out, play well, be sick, and go play at a high level as part of your Pepto-Bismol to get over your tummy illness with the way your defense is played. Listen, I look at the defense, and honestly, it will continue to get better. But for it to keep getting better, guys have to play and feel good, feel comfortable, feel confident. And the more they make some plays, the more they're on the field, it can get better. But from a pass rush standpoint, will that be solved at all this season for Nebraska? And I know historically speaking, and our friends at Hale Varsity have done such a great job between Jacob Padilla or Vogel or Derek Peterson or Greg Smith. I mean, and Babbers. I mean, they have all done stories on, you know, what this identity is defensively and historically under Diaco. Okay, you've had some great players at Notre Dame. There's been some individual guys that have gotten pass rush, but as a whole, You're not going to get busted for a cheap gash touchdown moving forward. That's the MO of this defense. So inherently, it is not about creating pressure, dictating pressure, or getting after the quarterback. Your fear, the other side of that is, are you going to be able to get off the field on third downs? No has been the answer. And are you going to be able to make enough plays to limit field position flips? Fine, they don't score on you. Fine, they get three instead of seven. Well, the better opponents, Oregon-like opponents, based on last week, is they're going to be able to get third downs on you. And they're going to turn those red zone opportunities into touchdowns unless you get better and get more concise. So moving forward, if you're Nebraska defensively, I don't know how much longer you can be conservative. The guy's got to get the defense down and go execute it. I understand that. But how much longer can you hang on with just a three- or a four-man rush? You're getting hit by some phenomenal athletes anyway for touchdowns or big plays, at least when you line up like opponents, Nebraska, Oregon. So why not do it at a high level with some speed guys off the edge? Do you have those guys? Well, maybe, maybe not, but do you know? How much have you seen Alex Davis blitz? You've seen him in coverage once. You've seen Gifford get in there and hurry the quarterback a few times. How much internal pressure are you getting from Mick up the middle as one of your three down linemen? Carlos has been pretty active. But again, one sack in 101 attempts. It's a bit misleading because guys aren't taking five or seven step drops. You're not taking on a pro style offense. You've not done a lot of game experience against just shotgun four wide where the guy's trying to scan the field. You haven't. You've taken different offenses on, and this is the third week in a row you're taking on a spread offense that's going to get the ball out of their hands and try and kind of chip away at you and then hit you for a big play. But when it comes to Big Ten action, can the defense develop a pass rush? Can you get better at rushing the passer, even against some of these teams that are designed to eliminate that part of your defense? It's a key question. And can you get some guys on there? And can you be a little more aggressive? Do you gamble a little bit more? It's risk-reward, right? You're asking your cornerbacks who've had some difficulty at this point preventing the big play, staying on a defender, not getting beat deep. What are you asking from your safeties? I mean, the trickle-down here is, okay, so you try and heat up a quarterback. You try and go after the pass. What's next? Well, you get beat deep. And the band's playing for the opposing team. But right now, you haven't shown the ability as of yet early on this season to stop them when you're playing conservative. So you just kind of switch the script here, go after it, maybe hurry them, maybe make the quarterback make a bad throw or a rush throw. Something to think about. And it's something that'll be interesting to see what type of pressure, if any, Nebraska tries to bring. What type of extra pressure do you see against Northern Illinois and future opponents? And you gotta pick your spots spread wise. I get that because it's a leveler playing field against teams like Nebraska when you have a spread offense you're taking on. So that's one comment last night that I was interested in hearing from Bob Diaco on. Let's talk a little bit here about minimizing, you know, what's going on. Is the team getting better defensively? Back to the Big Ten Network question, you know, is Nebraska's defense at a crossroads? And right now against Northern Illinois, yeah, they need to play better. It can't be 39 and 550 again. I don't know that Northern Illinois is that explosive to do that, but you just don't know because you've been in a free-for-all with this defense. But minimization, a key word here from Diaco on this thought.
And I surely, to anyone listening, don't want to minimize this in any way. I don't want to come off that way. There's a gravity and a weight to this that I totally understand. I'm respectful of that and honor that opportunity. And it doesn't look like it should look, and the points don't look like they should look. And that doesn't make it any more or less real that we're getting better. So unfortunately, that's true. We are getting better, and and the games have gone the way they've gone. And it got better, and it will continue to get better. And the staff improves and the players improve.
Okay. So it doesn't look like it, but take my word that it's getting better. Points per game? No. Yards per contest? No. But is the light going on for some of these guys? And he's saying yes. I'll believe him. And you may believe him when you see it from a performance standpoint defensively. He is aware of 39 and 550. Excuse me, I'm tacking on an extra 20 yards here, 530. And, you know, we'll see how Nebraska comes out, but it is a crossroads game on Saturday for this defense to come out and just keep getting better, again, through that in-game experience. More from Diaco later. We'll get some thoughts from a man who's covered Nebraska football. He's a Hall of Famer. He's a historian. He's an author, Mike Babcock, on the Black Friday decision with Nebraska and the Big Ten. Get his take on the Oregon game and Saturday against the Huskies. Mike Babcock is on the way. It's a Wednesday edition of Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
All right, great to be back with you. Mike Shewhart shortly. Brad Edwards next hour on college football, Nebraska, Oregon, and how about Louisville, Clemson this weekend. We welcome in historian, author, Hall of Famer, Mike Babcock with us of Hail Varsity at MD Babs on Twitter. Babbers, how are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing great, Smitty. I'm doing great.
Well, we started off talking a little bit about, you know, what type of pressure can Nebraska try and manufacture, and kind of pontificating here on the Big Ten Network's question, you know, is this a crossroads game for Nebraska defensively? Before we get your take on that, I want your thoughts here on Black Friday, all the day after Thanksgiving games you've had a chance to cover in your tremendous career covering Nebraska football, and your reaction to it going away.
Well, I'm a little disappointed that it went away, but probably not for the reason that other people are.
Okay.
The primary reason I'm disappointed is because it's just another reminder to me of where Nebraska has fallen in terms of the attention that it gets, the national relevance that it gets, Nebraska football. And the example I would use to show that it doesn't matter. The first year I was at the newspaper in 1978 when I started covering the Husker beat, Nebraska didn't play. It wasn't on Thanksgiving. It wasn't the day after Thanksgiving. The final regular season game was the Saturday before, and it was against Missouri. Mm-hmm. I mean, because of the scheduling, the Big Eight had tried to restructure the schedule, I think, to make sure that teams didn't play Nebraska and Oklahoma in the same year at home, or, you know, some, mm-hmm. there was something like that. And so Nebraska ended up playing Oklahoma on November 11th on a Saturday, and then a week later played Missouri. And both those games were in Lincoln. Neither one, as I said, was on Thanksgiving or the day after. So, I mean, when I started out on the deal, and I grew up certainly with the Nebraska-Oklahoma rivalry always being around Thanksgiving, there was great passion, and especially that was amped up, you know, with the game of the century. But 1978, I don't remember. Maybe there was, but I don't remember people getting all upset about it. Mm. I think that that's become more of a thing. You know, it really became an issue, I think, when all of a sudden Colorado was the opponent, you know, and people were a little bit disturbed by that, you know, because it was supposed to be Oklahoma and not Colorado. And then there was the issue going way back to when he got there, Bill McCartney declaring Nebraska Colorado's rival and not letting, you know, people at Colorado and the athletic department drive red cars. I mean, he took took it to the extreme, and Husker fans were like, oh, you know, Colorado's not our rival. You know, we refused to accept that. Well, it became that because Colorado ended up winning a national championship before Tom Osborne won his first. But, yeah, so that's a long answer, but only insofar as what it reflects does it bother me. You know, from a standpoint of how the schedule operates, I'm fine. I'm fine with Nebraska playing on the Saturday after. You know, is what it is, I guess. As Bob Diaco said about the defense the other day, it doesn't upset me on that level.
You know, and it's something I just kind of lost my mind on it yesterday because it's kind of what I've known growing up. And you're right. It's kind of twofold. One, you know, what's unique about Nebraska anymore, and it's kind of falling back to the pack from a program prestige standpoint. Now, being a team that has the history that Nebraska's had, it's easier to kind of climb that ladder back up and be awesome again, but you're still waiting for it. The other side of it here is, too, you almost feel like you got dumped. Because the deciders in the West have been Wisconsin for the most part since you've joined this league, and then Iowa a couple of years ago, and that's where the Big Ten's going. It's going to be Iowa and Wisconsin. They could move that to Friday as the showcase game. But the other side of it, too, is it's just Nebraska had that audience, and the reason they had that audience is because it was a top 10 matchup with Oklahoma. I will grant you and say that, yeah, Iowa-Nebraska has not been even as good as the Colorado-Nebraska matchups that day after Thanksgiving from a ranking and prestige and what's on the line standpoint, but it's been kind of a black and blue, you know, blue-collar, slug-it-out type ball game. Since you've joined the Big Ten, they've been close for the most part, except for last year. So if you're Nebraska here, you're just kind of moving off to stage left, so to speak, and there's something prettier out there for TV to get their hands on.
Well, yeah, I don't think you can blame the Big Ten in this instance because from a business standpoint,
you got to go with it, don't you?
Right. Yeah, I think Nebraska had the opportunity. But things just haven't worked out, in the Big Ten for Nebraska in terms of, at least winning the division, getting to the. You know, we know what happened when Nebraska got there against Wisconsin. That wasn't pretty, but and even with the Colorado thing, at least Nebraska had played Colorado a long time. I mean, they were conference foes going back to 1947, I think. So that when that became the after the Friday after Thanksgiving game, at least there was a history there. And even though obviously Iowa was sort of the designated rival when Nebraska got into the Big Ten, Nebraska hadn't played Iowa that much that often, and so Husker fans were kind of resistant, said it wasn't a rivalry. And I think now it's gotten to the point where maybe they get a little upset about Iowa, but the Big Ten is doing what it thinks is important, and you know, in this day and age, every game's televised anyway. Mm-hmm. So there is a special element of that the day after Thanksgiving, but Black Friday, everybody's out shopping anyway. So maybe you're better off playing on Saturday from an exposure standpoint because everybody gets TV exposure now. So. Mm-hmm. I can't blame the Big Ten on that. And my biggest concern is just that it's another reflection of something that's gone away, and I understand why it has.
Mike, how big is Saturday for this Nebraska defense?
You know, here's the thing, Smitty, and we're probably going to hear this every game. Then the conference play starts, and that's a big game and whatever. I thought going in, now I didn't think maybe to the degree that it was in the first half of the Oregon game, for sure, and the Arkansas State game. But I thought it was going to be it's a change, you know, going from a 4-3 to a 3-4. And this is my oversimplify. You mentioned Derek and Brandon and, Greg and Jacob. I mean, they analyze this stuff, and they know what they're talking about. I speak in generalities more so. This is a generality, but Now you go to a 3-4 because you want to be successful in the Big Ten, and particularly the Big Ten West. So you've got to have a defense where you can hold up against the run. That's your concern. You've got to get in there to where you can deal with these running teams. Now you're making a transition from a 4-3 to a 3-4, which is difficult anyway. And the first two teams that you play right off the bat, they're throwing the ball all over the place. And, you know, Oregon ran it as well, but it still threw the ball a lot. And suddenly, what you've done to change to be successful in the Big Ten West is not exactly the kind of defense that you want to play when you're in transition against teams that throw effectively, mm-hmm. which both Arkansas State and Oregon did.
That's the thing. And the 3-4, when you have it down, when you have your personnel, you'll be able to match up, not only stop the run in the West, but match up against some of the spread teams that you face. I mean, the versatility of it is ideal. It's just really tough to do right now. Babbers, we've got about 2 minutes here. Pass rush. Do you think Nebraska will stay conservative, or do you think they'll have to eventually just make that decision to get more aggressive and try and disrupt the quarterback more?
Well, I think that Nebraska does. Now, I don't know if it's a decision that can be made, you know, because I don't know if you have the players to do it, mm-hmm. or if in the transition you're having enough, I don't want to say problems, but you're focused enough on trying to make that switch, and guys are playing in positions in some cases where they're not, you know, they don't have experience there. I think it had the pass rush has to improve, but I don't know. Again, I don't know if it's necessarily want to. It's probably part of the scheme that they're trying to learn. You just have to get the guys that can do it. And again, I think it gets magnified because you're changing from a different base defense to that 3-4, and that's going to take time. And again, I didn't think it was going to be quite what it was in a couple of cases. But look at the adjustments that Nebraska made at halftime in both those games. The third quarter of the Arkansas State game, Nebraska, it was apparent Nebraska had made some significant adjustments there. In the same way at Oregon, the adjustments were significant on defense. So what you'd hope is that maybe Nebraska is a little bit shows a little bit more of that at the start of a game, you know, that it doesn't take a half to get settled in. But it's all part of the learning experience, and the bottom line is going to be, do you win or not? And people will see it differently if they do.
How big a hole is that you're trying to climb out of? That's a great question, and we'll see how Nebraska shores up against Northern Illinois on Saturday and gets prepped for conference play. Babbers, about 30 seconds here. Tell folks a little bit about the latest post you have at HaleVarsity.com in reference to Coach Osborne and his passing attack.
Oh, yeah. You know, Tom was a receivers coach for mm-hmm. Bob Devaney, and he kind of redesigned the offense. And Nebraska had pretty good passing offense in there. You know, the national championship team in 1971, I believe, led the Big Eight in passing. But there was good balance there, obviously. Could run the ball with Jerry Taggy was a decent runner, good passer. Jeff Kinney, Nebraska had a great running game, obviously. But it was a balanced offense. But, yeah, Nebraska could throw the ball. Tom just finally figured out that, hey, in order to be successful in the Big Eight, you got to be able to run the ball and you got to deal with a running team. That's Oklahoma. So, you know, things don't change in that sense.
Nope, they haven't, and got to stop the run and be able to run it. Babbers, awesome stuff. Thanks for a few minutes today.
Hey, great talking to you, Smitty.
There he is, Hall of Famer, historian, author, Mike Babcock. 40 years and counting, Nebraska coverage, Nebraska excellence, at MD Babs on Twitter. Wilderness Ridge Golf time coming up. Mike Shewhart. Shuey's got that old Johnny Carson swing going. Actually, Johnny copied Shuey's swing, I think. Brad Edwards. College Football Insider, ESPN, Hour 2 on the way.
And now, back to Hale Varsity Radio.
A feel-good talk, Wilderness Ridge Golf. Mike Shewhart is in Shuey with us on Hale Varsity Radio, wildernessridgegolf.com. Fall golf is here. Membership pricing, membership benefits, and great pros at Wilderness Ridge, Chris Thompson, and of course, Shuey is in. Shuey, what do you know, man? How are you?
I'm doing great.
Yeah?
How about this weather?
It's a little warm today, but that's
September.
No, I know that's okay, but it's been fall-like.
It's been awesome
for a lot of it, man. And I tell you what, be sure to stop by Wilderness Ridge, and we talk about the golf. And please go play 9 on the Talon course, or go to the championship course and get 18 in, maybe after the Nebraska game or this Sunday. And it's going to continue to just be gorgeous conditions this fall in Wilderness Ridge, where you need to go play that fall golf. But when you're done, I can't stress enough yet the bourbon tasting coming up. I think October 25th is when that's happening. You can log on wildernessridge.com for reservations and tickets to that. But the bourbon tasting is something to keep in the back of your pocket for sure. The new fall menus that they are offering, some dishes you'll want to check out. Can make reservations, can walk in, and when it's got that just perfect chill in the air, and you can put a little zip up on, maybe still have your shorts and flip-flops on, can sit out on that deck and watch the sunset, no bugs, it's comfortable, and it's
wow.
Tremendous.
You painted a pretty good picture right there.
I'll tell you why. I got an anniversary coming up. That's shocking news enough. But we were married. And our reception, it was at Wilderness Ridge,
nice.
right when it was first built.
Nice.
And we had, you know, tons of folks on the deck. Some of us snuck off and was harped at about, you know, wedding pictures when you got college football on. I think it was the Tennessee-Arkansas game where the thing went like 6 overtimes.
Yeah.
Had my attention. It was a bye week. It was a bye Nebraska week. So, Shuey, let's talk a little bit of golf. How's your week been?
Been good. Yeah. Getting ready to go. We leave Friday to go to Wisconsin, play the Big Ten match play tournament out there. So just been prepping for that, getting ready, and excited about going out there and playing.
So talk to me a little bit here about getting prepped for Big Ten opponents. What's unique and special with some of the foes you see in the Big Ten?
Well, this tournament in particular, it's going to be a different because it's a match play format. So it's quite a bit different than what we play all the time. You know, we play stroke play events mm-hmm. pretty much all year, and this is a match play event. So a little bit different format, you know, just because if you make a 10, it doesn't really hurt you. You just lose a hole.
Sure.
If you make a 10 in stroke play, man, it's hard to recover from.
Yeah,
it's pretty
exaggerated. I will vouch for that.
So just a little different format. So, and a lot just from our first tournament, learning a little bit of some of the things that we need to do, mm-hmm. that the players need to do, and try to work on some of those things and carry them over into this week and see if we can make them better.
Shuey, you know, we've talked a lot of football. You're a huge football fan as well. And you can't just beat in-game or on-course action. You can practice, but you got to go do it when the lights are on, so to speak. And describe that that development of not only the preparation but the execution that you take pride in from a coaching standpoint and a teaching standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of the learning curve that you have to go through. I mean, you can stand on the range and hit balls.
Mm-hmm.
See a lot of tour players on the range. I mean, they look good. It's like, wow, that guy swings it great. He hits it great.
Uh-huh.
So then it's time to go take it to the golf course. So now I'm on the golf course just practicing. Becomes a little different than the driving range. Gets a little harder.
A little venue difference.
Yeah, it gets a little harder, a few more obstacles out there that get in my way that start to influence me a little bit. Then you take it one step farther as you actually add a tournament conditions to it. So each step gets harder and harder and harder. So it's like, how do you prepare for that? A lot of the preparation is you got to put yourself there. You know, I'm a firm believer in you have to fail before you succeed. But you have to learn from your failures that help you succeed. And that's kind of, to me, one of the tricks is that failure is a tricky thing because failure can lead to a lack of confidence and disbelief in what it is you think you're doing, what I need to do, all kinds of things like that. So you have to learn how to take your failures, learn what they are, identify what they are, work on what those are, and get some success by what we learn from our failures. You know, whether it be just a technique, whether it be it's a mental or managerial, which is how do I manage myself around the golf course? Most of the players, especially our players, their technique is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
They know how to do it. So it's like, how do we think about things in certain situations? It's like, whether it be just how I take a certain line that I want to hit a shot on. It's like, can we can we take a different line that actually increases our percentages for success instead of trying to like thread the needle through there? So it's like, if it gets done, great. If you miss it a little bit, you're going to put yourself in a pretty compromised position. So it's like, we can take another line and achieve the same thing, with which that's much safer for us, you know. So it's like, and then our second position is not one of difficulty, it's one of comfort, because I'm in a position that I'm comfortable with. I can hit this shot. It's an easier shot. So a lot of it is more managerial, how you think about it, how you deal with adversity, you know. So a lot of the things that you work on, it's no different than any other sports. It's like, you know, you get 42 points put on you in a half. It's like, you thinking you're any good or not, you know? Your confidence gets tested.
Yeah.
So how do you respond to that? How do you keep the faith in what it is I do? So.
Well, and I'm not going to make this T-shirt up or anything, but you got to kind of defeat the doubt, don't you? Because when you screw up, immediately, you're a competitor, so you're hacked off about screwing up. But does it linger and kind of keep kicking you, keeping you down? Or do you rise up, fight back, and then answer the question?
Yeah.
That question being, is it going to happen again or not?
Does my failure inspire me to succeed? Or does my failure inspire me to
keep failing, right?
Exactly. To doubt more and more and more and more, you know, and question and do all those things. Or does it drive me to go, you know, I'm not going to do that again. I'm not going to do that again. Or understand that it's okay. I am human. I am going to hit a bad shot when I play. But you know what? I am going to hit a good one. So I call it my 90-10 rule.
Okay.
So if I have an accomplished player and we walk out to the driving range or anywhere, and I'd throw 10 golf balls on the ground, and I had them just hit 10 shots, especially with a club they're very comfortable hitting, they would hit 9 out of those 10, probably pretty good, or at least what I call a very playable shot.
Sure.
So when we get onto the course and we start to play and we have that same shot, our tendency is to go, I might not hit this very well.
Because of the situation.
But if we look at it, it's like, you know what? I have a 10% chance of hitting this poorly, but I have a 90% chance to hit it well. So just by saying that, I mean, that breeds confidence. I got a 90% chance to hit this really good. Or I have a 10% chance to hit it bad.
So what side of the aisle are you on? The 10 or the 90 thinking?
And most of us have a tendency to play in the 10%.
Mm-hmm.
When they actually do it really well at a high percentage of the time. But when it really counts, we have a tendency to look at the 10% instead of the 90.
It's how you look at it, man. It's a whole glass.
That's right.
Half empty. It's Mike Shewhart. Wilderness Ridge Golf segment continues. Get that tee time locked in for fall golf. WildernessRidgeGolf.com. Find out about the membership pricing. More with Mike Shewhart. Shuey, when we come back.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Winding down the Wilderness Ridge Golf segment, Mike Shewhart. Shuey is in studio. Brad Edwards, 10 minutes away to talk some college football. The topic of hope. Hoping that golf ball goes straight, stays out of the beach, and kind of treating the tournament swing like the practice swing, something we're discussing. And, man, sports is so mental, golf the same way. And you know, there's a point in your career as a player, from high school and college, and if you're lucky enough to go beyond either, that you just have that mental moxie where it does shift and you pretty much own it.
Yeah, pretty
this
much.
Has been a very inspiring show today when it comes to, you know, motivational speaking.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, yeah. But we're not off. With the coaching and then the execution side of it.
And it's true. Like a golfer, speak from personal, is like,
sure.
As I, you know, I played at a certain level, but what helped me do some of the things that I did is that, again, I had to fail. I had to get in the situations and get in the arena and get beat. But each time I got beat, I felt like I could compete. Mm-hmm. You know? So say, yeah, I lost and I got beat, but I really truly felt like I could compete at that, you know? So it's like, go out there again, you get a little closer. So pretty soon it's like, you know, I can play with these guys.
It built your game.
Exactly.
But there wasn't fool's gold attached to it.
No. You know, part of it is just you have to have short-term memory, or you have to be a little bit, you just have to have that will and desire, and that's what it is that you want to do. This is where I'm going, and this is how I'm going to get there, and I'm going to get there, you know, and I'm going to work really hard at it, and I'm going to learn to do this, I'm going to learn to do that. It's just all about belief. I mean, I believe that I am going to get there. Desire, belief, will, want, all those things, that this is where I want to go, you know. Whether you get there or not is irrelevant, kind of, but...
Still chasing it.
You know, because there's other elements that go along with that. Mm-hmm. You do have to have talent, you know. You can't just want to get there with not the talent. So there's a combination of a whole bunch of things that get there, but...
There's some prerequisites.
Yeah. I mean, you got to be able to do some things,
yeah,
you know. But it's, again, as you keep doing that. And again, you get punched in the mouth along the way a lot. I mean, you get knocked down, and it's like part of getting knocked down is like, how much do you have left to get up? How many times can you get off the mat, you know? And it's like, why do you get up in the morning? It's like, I never had problem getting up in the morning. I wanted to get up in the morning, get to the golf course, and practice and do the things I do because I loved it, one, and it was something I wanted to do because I felt it was going to get me to where it is I wanted to go. You know, it's like no one ever had to say, you need to go to the golf course. It's like they did the opposite. You need to go home, brother, because you've been here too long.
Sure.
You know?
So. No, it's that focus. Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf segment, wildernessridgegolf.com. Shuey's with us on Wednesdays, and they are off into Big Ten play this end of this week. State caller 9 and 10 right now. Caller 9, caller 10. Qualify for Northern Illinois, Nebraska tickets, and Blur Party passes. Caller 9, caller 10 qualifies right now. 466-3776. 466-3776. 800-825-5865. Caller 9, caller 10. Brad Edwards on the way with ESPN.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Hour 2, it's Wednesday, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Thanks to Mike Shewhart. Shewie's still hanging out. We love catching up with Brad Edwards, ESPN Insider, College Game Day, at J. Brad Edwards on Twitter. Brad, how are you, sir? Week 3 is here.
Hey, week 3 is here. Unfortunately, it doesn't look like as exciting of a slate as week 2, but still one really big game in the ACC, and then a few others that seem interesting. And you know what? Sometimes it's days like this where something really unexpected happens when you're just kind of focused on one or two games and thinking you're going to ignore the rest. Sometimes those other games refuse to be ignored.
No, and that's when you get some of those ho-hum weeks, right, that you get the upset, you get kind of the you clear the cobwebs for a program, you get a scare, maybe you get a little fat and happy after two games. So we'll see. We'll get into Louisville and Clemson in a minute. I want to start with Nebraska, though, Brad, and was listening to you on College Game Day Saturday, getting, you know, running some errands before the Nebraska-Oregon game and getting ready to settle in for that. Awful first half, acceptable second half, but not the finish for a lot of Nebraska fans. What did you make, Brad, of that performance from Nebraska and just how that game played out? It wasn't a ultra high profile game. It wasn't Oklahoma, Ohio State, but it was, you know, kind of a nice appetizer, so to speak, for two programs trying to get back. What'd you think of that game?
Yeah, the first half didn't really surprise me all that much. It was kind of what we talked about last week, mm-hmm. which is that against that team in their stadium, things happen very quickly. And if you don't answer their scores, then sometimes it doesn't take but about another minute for them to score again. And that's kind of what happened, is it just kind of snowballed on Nebraska there. And they are, you know, probably about the 50th team in the last decade to have happened to them at Austin Stadium. But full disclosure, I stopped watching at halftime, as I think a lot of people who didn't have a dog in the fight did. And so I saw the final score, and I was like, wow. And of course, my first thought as well is probably just a meaningless last second touchdown that just, you know, the backdoor cover of the point spread and all that. But then I saw the replay, and I saw Nebraska had it near midfield with 2 minutes left. And so they obviously, you know, got back in it with a very good chance to, you know, to at least force overtime, if not, you know, try to win it there at the very end. And so, I mean, hats off to them for fighting back. And I don't know what they did to keep Oregon from scoring in the second half, but, you know, that in itself is impressive.
Oregon had a little help as well, because they attempted 8 passes in the second half. Nebraska got better against the run, and Nebraska got hot early on in the third quarter. There was a lot of time in between that touchdown to bring it within 7, and Nebraska had their opportunity, not only with DeMornay Pearson-Ell to return a punt that was fair caught, but you start out 55 yards away with 2:15 left, and Tanner Lee, a chance to go legend there. Instead, it's a hurry, a hit, an interception, the fourth of the day. One thing that I took away was Oregon's quarterback, Herbert, pretty unheralded, but you know about him now, especially if you're a Nebraska fan, because of how he looked in the first half. Just a sophomore, had about half a year of starting experience after Prokop got knocked out last year. You have Graham, the cornerback, and then another wideout that is pretty much playing the Carrington spot, and that's Dylan. You had two freshmen and a true sophomore just do their thing against Nebraska's experienced players and also young players. That, to me, is a difference in college football. Are you getting young guys in, and are they able to play up to or better than your studs in big games? Oregon seems to be able to do that. Clemson seems to be able to do that. You know, Bama can do it. But it's pretty rare, isn't it, Brad, to have guys that can identify talent and develop it at such a young age, and then have those guys play in big games really, really well?
Yeah, I mean, it takes a special kind of guy to come in at a high-profile program, be able to play as a true freshman. Mm-hmm. You know, you have your programs who do a really good job of evaluating talent, where they, you know, find a guy that nobody's really looking at out of high school. Maybe the guy's playing the wrong position, and they see the potential, bring him in, and maybe it takes a year or two for him to get on the field. You know, some programs are built that way, but the ones that, you know, can recruit the type of kids who can come in and have an impact as a true freshman, those are the ones that usually sustain success. Those are the ones that, you know, when they lose a bunch of starters in the previous year, tend to not fall off as much, because, you know, they're plugging people in, and it doesn't matter whether they're juniors or freshmen. They're able to get the job done well enough that there's not a, you know, a huge drop-off from the previous year.
Brad Edwards with us a few minutes. Hail Varsity Radio at J. Brad Edwards on Twitter. With this Nebraska defense, Diaco spoke after the practice session yesterday, and he understands that it doesn't look like it's supposed to, paraphrasing, but it's getting better. I think they are getting a little better. You just haven't seen it. I think Saturday is a huge game, but not a huge opponent, to see how far along by week 3 Nebraska can be. The thing that I wanted to get your take on here, Brad, is what do you do? Do you still play conservatively, for lack of a better term, against another spread team based on what's been done to you by Oregon and a non-Oregon team? Or do you try and mix it up and bring some pressure, because quarterbacks have had all day, and the stat of the week is 101 pass attempts, 1 sack by the Nebraska pass rush?
Before I answer that, was it when you were talking about what Diaco said after practice, was this the extended soundbite where he essentially talked about spiraling into control.
Yes.
And
yes.
Yeah, we ran that one on our podcast today. And it was one of those. That,
how long's like, your podcast? Because the quote was about 2.5.
Right. So it's one of those that, like, as soon as it's over, you're thinking, what did he say? But it's like, that was the one part that I caught. It was, instead of something spiraling out of control, he was talking about spiraling into control.
So right.
That's a new phrase for us on the podcast, spiraling into control. You know, I think what you do at this stage, it's all about the conference schedule at this point. I mean, the loss to Oregon, I'm sure you would have loved to have won that game, but Nebraska wasn't contending for a playoff spot this year. So that doesn't do anything to their goals for the season. They still want to give it their best shot to win the West and the Big Ten. And so I think that's really what you're building toward at this point. That's really what you should have been building toward last week. I'm not saying they weren't, but I think that's what the pre-conference schedule is all about. It's getting ready for conference play, unless you're one of the select few teams in the country that, you know, that has legitimate playoff aspirations. And so it's kind of like preseason, even though that's not what it is. It's still the same basic principle, and that you're preparing for the, you know, for the games that are really going to matter the most for you. And so whatever it is that Nebraska does need to get under control going into conference play, I think that's what they focus their efforts on this week, no matter who the opponent is.
All right, Oklahoma, Ohio State, were you surprised by the outcome?
Yes, I was. I was not surprised that Baker Mayfield looked good. I mean, he's so experienced, and he has such a command of that offense that he's able to make decisions, you know, as quickly as you have to be able to have success against Ohio State. Because even with a good offensive line like Oklahoma has, those guys on the defensive front, they're on top of you in a hurry. And yet Baker Mayfield, he's able to just, you know, run, whether it's a, you know, a zone read or just your more conventional play action. I mean, he puts that ball into the gut of the running back and then pulls it out, and it seems like in less than a second that ball is out of his hand and hits in a perfect spot, either a running back in the backfield or a receiver who's just beyond the line of scrimmage. And, you know, if you're a linebacker or a safety and you're trying to read keys, you can't react to it as quickly as he's doing it. And so it's almost impossible to stop when he's on. And so I wasn't surprised that they were able to score some points. What surprised me, and of course I wasn't surprised that Ohio State struggled passing the ball, because we've seen this for a while.
Yeah.
And certain things that need to change for them have not changed yet. I guess the thing that caught me off guard is that Ohio State does not seem to have figured out that they run the ball better than they throw it. And I'm still waiting for them to decide they're just going to commit to the run. Now, I mean, maybe this is, you know, bigger picture in that Ohio State is aware that there are certain opponents on their schedule, probably Penn State, Michigan, that they aren't simply going to be able to line up and just, you know, hand the ball off 50 times and run over them. And they're eventually going to have to be able to throw the ball to win their biggest games on the schedule. And maybe that's the reason they're doing this, is because it's all with the bigger picture in mind. But I tell you what, the way that they're calling plays right now, and the way that they're executing in the passing game, they're not that difficult of a team to stop offensively if you have good athletes on defense.
Well, that's absolutely right. And since Cardale, since Herman, you've had Barrett there, and he does everything for you except win the monster game. He's perfect at going 11-1. And he's even beaten Michigan throughout his career. All that said, when push comes to shove, I mean, their hump they're getting over is, you know, another national championship. And, you know, downfield, that there's just not a threat. And against similar competition, the Clemsons of the world, you can't just line up and smash mouth them. You have to be multidimensional. Let's talk Clemson, Louisville. Man, you know what? Lamar Jackson's had an incredible start. He's just fantastic. Clemson's defensive line was incredible against a team that's not supposed to allow sacks because they get rid of the ball so quick in Auburn and Gus's offense. What happens with Clemson-Louisville this weekend?
Yeah, this one's fascinating to me because, you know, Clemson, obviously, with all the sacks against Auburn, you're thinking, wow, this defensive line is just going to overwhelm Louisville. Because you flash back to when we saw Louisville the last couple times they played against a good defense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, LSU in the bowl game. Now, let's forget the two games this year. We know North Carolina and Purdue are not good defensive teams. So as great as Lamar Jackson looked last week, I mean, we saw that in a lot of games last year. But against LSU in the bowl, against Houston late in the season, the Louisville offensive line just got overwhelmed, and Jackson didn't have time to do anything. And so my gut feeling is that, you know what, that's just going to happen again. That, you know, that once they go up against guys that are better than them on the offensive line, it's lights out. But then I went back and I watched last year's game, and it's easy to forget because of the Houston and LSU performances that against Florida State and Clemson, two other teams with really good defensive lines, they scored a lot of points on those guys.
Yes.
And in last year's game at Clemson, Louisville couldn't do anything in terms of blocking Clemson in the first quarter. But second quarter and beyond, they figured it out. And they scored 36 points in those last three quarters. They had actually, they might have scored very end of the first quarter. I know Lamar Jackson had he had 7 yards rushing at the end of the first quarter. He finished with 162. And so what that tells you is that they don't have to make a living throwing the ball. I mean, Auburn, you know, got in that position where they were trying to throw, and they had no time to do it. Because of Lamar Jackson, Louisville doesn't have to put the ball in the air a lot. They don't have to drop back a lot. He showed last year that he's capable of running on this defense, and that's what I'm most looking forward to seeing. The other thing is that, you know, Clemson, while the defense has been incredibly impressive, we're still not sure how good they are on offense. Obviously, they didn't score many points against Auburn. They didn't need to, and I caught them a little slack because they could have afforded to be conservative in the play calling, knowing their defense was in complete control. You just don't want to screw something up and give Auburn something easy with a turnover. But at the same time, you can't expect to hold Louisville to two field goals.
No.
And so Clemson's probably going to have to score, I'm guessing, at least in the 20s to win this game. And I think it's reasonable to question whether their offense is at a point right now where that can be assumed that they will. So I think there's enough mystery there to make this a game worth watching.
Brad Edwards, ESPN.com and magazine, ESPN Game Day, ESPN Radio at J. Brad Edwards. Brad, about 20 seconds. Give folks the podcast they can check in with you, the Championship Drive podcast that's posted now for folks, correct?
Yeah, Championship Drive podcast has been renamed. It's called Campus Conversation. I didn't name it. I don't know where the name came from, but whatever. That's what it's called now. It's on the ESPN app. I was on today, so go check it out there. And then on Saturday, 7.5 hours, you're on Central Time, so 11 to 6:30 your time. On Saturday from Louisville, we'll be doing College Game Day.
That'll be awesome. Enjoy your trip, and we'll spiral into control for week three, my friend.
We'll do it. Talk to you next week.
Take care. There he is, Brad Edwards with us. ESPN College Game Day, ESPN Radio. You catch that, of course, here in Lincoln and across many of our affiliates with the Hail Varsity Network that are ESPN affiliates. And we'll hear Bob talk about spiraling into control, more on this defense, more on Nebraska as they get ready for them Mighty Huskies. A jock doc coming up on a fantasy running back. Let's be straight. You're sad about that has a dislocated wrist. If you're a fan of the Cardinals, we'll continue on a Wednesday at Hail Varsity presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Thank you, Stifler. Jock Doc coming up. Brad Edwards, tremendous. You miss any part of the show, please catch us on the podcast, HailVarsity.com, iTunes, or the ESPN Lincoln app. You might have noticed a different soybean sign in your neighbor's fields this year. Yep, that's right. AgriGold. Our customers now have access to select soybean varieties direct from their farm. The AgriGold way. There's high expectations for seeds every year, and that goes into the ground, and their approach to soybeans no different. High expectations, high performance soybeans from a brand you already know. For more information, visit agrigold.com, 800-262-7333. Let's keep that expectation talk going. And we started hour one, crossroads game for the defense. A question BTN was discussing when it comes to Bob Diaco, the Nebraska defense. Okay, by game three, do you kind of mellow out? Going Cheech and Chong here. Do you mellow out from a point production put up against you, from a yardage total? And before that, though, Danny Burke is our esteemed producer and contributor. He is the pride of Chicago. I think he has a Hector Villanueva jersey. He's that big a Cubs fan. And I got to ask you this, because you're in a unique spot to Black Friday for a second. And I'm still irate and distraught that it's going to be no more. But I get it. Begrudgingly, you're just not that special anymore. And Iowa and Wisconsin are sexier, apparently, for the Big Ten from the end-of-season matchup. You've got a family member that goes to Iowa. You go to Nebraska. You're both from Chi-Town. How big is Black Friday to you? And I'm asking you because you're a dude that came to Nebraska to go to school based on the broadcast performance and the journalism school. It's tremendous. I love it. But you're also a huge sports fan, right? I mean, you watch Sue, you watch Levante, David. I mean, kind of your wheelhouse before you became college age, right? So Black Friday, is that a game that you lived and died for growing up watching college ball?
Growing up, not as much. I mean, I definitely did because, you know, you go out, you get your Black Friday shop, and you come back, you relax, you enjoy watching the game. So it's fun to watch the huge games, but it didn't mean as much to me until I started, you know, getting really involved.
A little more reinforcement.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so, my sister went to Iowa. She's 2 years older than me, so after Thanksgiving, always on that Black Friday, we'd always be, you know, the house would be split in half, debating on who's going to root for who, who's mom going to root for, who's dad going to root for, but really came down to who's doing better at that point in the season. But yeah, I loved it. I loved looking forward to it. My sister and I would just be jabbing back and forth at each other. So it kind of stinks that it got moved, but I mean, we'll still have the rivalry, but yeah, there's nothing like the tradition of, you know, the day it's on and what it really means to be on that specific time.
You know, and you can do something about it if you're Nebraska, and that's just start winning and start winning big games. But again, crawling before you walk or run, and the defense, where does it go? How does it improve? Bob Diaco and Mitch Sherman was on with us yesterday. Mitch asked this question, pretty much paraphrasing the question here, and there's three different parts to it. It's the comment Brad Edwards talked about, spiraling into control, okay? And I get it. When things are going just ape bleep around you, do you kind of focus and then get better, right? Does all the shots you've taken, do you shake out of it and fly right? And the question was posed, you know, are you where you thought you'd be on defense at this point? And here's the first part of it from Coach Diaco.
There's a lot of change that's gone on in the last 30 days, for sure the last 60 days. And that's such as life. I mean, it's not unique to Nebraska football. It's all over. And it's through years. And it'll be the same in the future, you know. You have to roll with, in a contact sport that's a challenging game, that things happen. And unfortunately, it's been in one room. It's been in one room. Basically, three starters and their coach. So it's been an interesting month for that room. But at the same time, there are young players that can play. And they're really good guys. And they're tough. And they are on fire for their work. It's just a work in progress, and it's a developmental piece that's going to take playing in the games.
Okay, so a lot there. You've had injuries, you've had death, you've had transition from a coaching standpoint. He's just laying out what has happened before you get your arrows ready about excuse making. This is fact. These things have happened. And things like this happen to other programs too. So you have a bunch of guys. You have three starters. It's been the defensive room he's talking about. And you knew it was going to be up and down, but did you think it'd be this bad? And they don't want to be bad. And they're going to try and change that label from bad to better. And it'll be Saturday that you need to see a major step forward, because it's going to be your third training session, for lack of a better term. And maybe, again, against lesser explosive offenses, you'll be okay. But get to that point and get out of town feeling better about yourself. More from Diaco when it comes to, you know, did you think you'd be at this point defensively?
You had an opportunity to see it. You know, the players at times were playing and thinking that they should be doing XYZ rather than falling back to their training. We had a chance to settle down and play one play at a time, get the call, execute your job, nothing more, nothing less, and just see what happens. And sure enough, the plays looked better. Drives were put together, you know, stops were put together, and before long a quarter ended, and then another drive, and then another drive, and then another quarter ended, and you got a chance to get a little bit of a surge there, for sure in teaching, to say, hey, this is what it looked like.
Okay, so with Diaco there, that's kind of the explanation to the start, and then maybe a bit of the stabilization. Again, this is something we played in hour one, but the expectation versus the result here with this defense so far.
And I surely, to anyone listening, don't want to minimize this in any way. I don't want to come off that way. There's a gravity and a weight to this that I totally understand. I'm respectful of that, and honor that opportunity. And it doesn't look like it should look, and the points don't look like they should look. And that doesn't make it any more or less real that we're getting better. So unfortunately, that's true. We are getting better, and the games have gone the way they've gone. And it got better, and it will continue to get better. And the staff improves, and the players improve.
Okay. Doesn't look like it, but it's getting better. Confidence. We spent a lot of time talking with Shuey about that. You've heard it mentioned and asked about, and it's really on both sides of the ball. Do you believe you're going to be good at what you're doing? And then do you go do it? And here is that line of reinforcing confidence and then seeing the result, an actual materialization of success.
Yeah, it's very important, but you know, when you're in the arena and you are trading blows, you know, it's you know, you're the competitor, and you're either going to rise in that moment with competitive greatness, or there's going to be a moment where you wilt, and there's not a whole lot of words that can change that circumstance while it's happening. And no one intends to do that. They all want it. They're all trying hard. They all want to do well, and we all want to do well. What happens is the confidence comes because you prepare, and then you have something good that happens to you, and then you feel good about it. And then you prepare better because you feel good about it. And then something else good happens to you. And then you feel better about yourself. So you prepare harder. And then more good things happen. And it just keeps spiraling. Something other than that would be just false fake confidence. That'll might be okay in pregame. But once the ball turns over, it won't have lasting effects.
Okay. It's a lot. Spiraling. Spiraling. Like, getting out of that. When I think of what Nebraska's defense has looked like right now, I mean, I've got to go to the old standby Top Gun. What happened? Well, Maverick whacked Goose unintentionally, but he couldn't pull out of it because that damn Iceman cut him off. Happened again towards the end of the movie, and he was okay. He saved Iceman. That's what the defense going on right now with it. So he lined out a linear explanation of how things get better. Cut nine. This is the best thing that was said last night. And if you're an overs better at gambling, you totally get this.
Hey, you know, America loves points.
That's damn right, Bob. There was so much covered. And it's always nice to hear from Coach Diaco. Coming up, a chance for you to qualify for Nebraska Northern Illinois tickets. Two of them for you. We'll give away tomorrow. Blur party passes. It's an early one. That is okay because Blur gets you rocking with their tailgate. And you know, if you're a red beer guy, God love you. If you're a Bloody Mary guy, God love you. If you're an orange beer person, it's okay. Danny is shaking his head saying no. Let's talk about Northern Illinois for a second and just what's going on with them. They had kind of a two-quarterback system going. Their main guy's been whacked, and the backup now will get his second career start. He played okay last week, but here is what you see and what you get with that Husky offense.
Yeah, they're actually very similar guys. They're similar physically. They're about the same height, about the same weight. The offense doesn't seem to change at all based on one or the other. They both run that offense and manage it really well. They both played a year ago, so it's really more of the same. The starter that played against Eastern Illinois started and played in their last regular season game in 2016. So they both played a bunch of football, and the offense is virtually the same.
Okay. Week three against the spread, nothing over 30. Is that a fair number? 30 points or less, you'll see it perhaps. Maybe they'll exceed it. Not sure, but does the defense step their game up after a third week against a similar offense? We are at Miller Time Pub this Friday with Hail Varsity, a road show. We want to see you out there 4 to 6. It's the High Life Hour going on 4 to 7. So great beer specials, great drink specials. Same thing, beer and drinks are one and the same. But also appetizers and just a tremendous atmosphere. 13th and L inside the legendary Cornhusker Marriott Miller Time Pub. We are there this Friday. Hail Varsity on the road 4 to 6. Hail Varsity continues presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for a Jock Doc Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. Dr. Doug Tavis with us. Dr. Doug, how are you?
Doing pretty good. How are you doing, Chris?
You know, I'm 0-1 in fantasy.
You're still stuck in that world, huh?
Oh, come on now. I know you're missing it.
Yeah, that's right. You're right.
My son is now my general manager, dragging him through the mud in this thing. And
there you go.
He really wanted to go after David Johnson. Trade for him, get him somehow, some way, get him onto our roster this year. And I resisted, showing my wisdom and age, right?
Well, you're clairvoyant. Huh?
Right. David Johnson, just a great, great kid. Northern Iowa product, is out, man, for 8 to 12 weeks, 2 to 3 months. He has been so good in such a short amount of time for Arizona, Dr. Doug. The wrist dislocation, this thing looks ugly, doesn't it?
Yeah, I tell you, this is a pretty tough one, really. For a guy who uses that extremity in a protective way on every time he carries the ball, as well as, you know, the maintaining the stability of the ball, it's pretty hard to imagine that he's going to be able to handle all of his regular duties, you know, even in that 2 to 3 month time frame.
Dr. Doug Tavis with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, a Jock Doc Wednesday, talking David Johnson and seeking a second opinion on that left wrist injury suffered against Detroit. Detroit wanted to draft Arizona wanted to draft Amir Abdullah. They ended up getting David Johnson. It's worked out well for both squads, but David Johnson's been a Pro Bowl 1,000-yard rusher, and he's been a vital part of the offense. Dr. Doug, with this wrist injury, you kind of touched on just the protective standpoint of that wrist and what you do with the ball carrying with the stiff arm, and then when you fall, obviously. But when it comes to you and what you need to do to fix David Johnson up, how do you guys kind of attack that to get him healthy again?
Well, the the biggest issue, of course, on taking care of any injury is just coming up with the really firm diagnosis. And so, you know, he's had another opinion done here as well. Everybody's in agreement, it sounds like, that he needs to have the surgery. And so when you think about wrist dislocations, what it implies is that there's been ligament damage around the wrist that has allowed for the wrist to move in an abnormal manner, so that it allows those bones to move in an abnormal manner relative to each other. And, you know, there's seven little bones in your wrist and then your arm bones that they attach to. And so there's lots and lots of little ligament constraints that are there. And when you have an injury like this, those ligaments get damaged and then the bones start to move abnormally relative to each other, and then that becomes a source of a great deal of pain, which obviously had, you know, the play afterwards where he fumbled. So you make that firm diagnosis of what ligaments are damaged, and then your choices are either you cast it to try and allow things to heal in on their own, or you go in surgically to stabilize the positions of the bone and then fix those ligaments.
From a surgery standpoint, more times than not, that's the route you go, isn't it, with a wrist dislocation?
Yeah, I think once you make that firm understanding of what's been damaged with the ligaments, there's a particular set of ligaments called the scapholunate ligaments that when those ligaments are damaged, you know that if you don't go in there and stabilize that ligament damage that's been done, that individual is going to go on to develop an arthritic wrist over the course of just a few years afterwards. And so the fact that there was really no question about whether or not he was going to have surgery makes me think that's probably where the ligament damage has occurred.
Dr. Doug Tavis with his Lincoln Orthopedic Center at Jock Doc Wednesday. So we're talking David Johnson, tailback for Arizona, a dislocated wrist out 8 to 12 weeks, and it's a pretty serious injury, short-term and could be long-term for his comfort and effectiveness carrying that football for the Cardinals. Now, with this injury, how difficult is it on your guys' end to go in and fix it just because of all the ligaments, all the muscles, all the connective tissue there that needs to be repaired? It sounds like it's really a maze to try and fix.
Yeah, it's you're saying it correctly. It's just a lot of little ligaments, and there's some major ones. Like I said, the scapholunate ligament is really the biggie. A lot of advances have been made in this over the course of the last 20 years. We've got some ability to do reconstructions of those ligaments. If we can't repair them, we can go in and do a reconstruction like we do with an ACL, where we take another piece of tissue and plug it into that area where the ligament has been damaged. And so, thankfully, there's guys like Nick Gove, who's my partner, who does complex hand stuff. And, these guys have really brought the level of ability to repair and reconstruct these things up to another level over the last 20 years. So the prognosis is a lot better than it used to be.
It sounds like it from a reconstructive standpoint and a recovery. Once guys get this fixed and get kind of back to normalcy, so to speak, with just movement and feel, then get back to carrying the football, I'd assume. But that's going to take a while from a comfort standpoint, isn't it?
Yeah, there's, like when you think about him landing, carrying the ball in his right hand, and he's coming down from a tackle, landing on his left wrist, that hyperextension of the wrist that absorbs that stress, that's going to be uncomfortable for quite a while because there's going to be stiffness there, and that until that stiffness gets worked out to where it can absorb that shock, and the wrist can be pliable, you'll see him tucking his arm underneath him, for instance, so that he doesn't land on that outstretched hand as much as what he would have previously. He may very well function at a high level later on this season, but I'd be looking for him to be back in form really by maybe next year as opposed to later this year.
Dr. Doug, I mean, is there a typical break-in standpoint, for lack of a better term, to get the wrist feeling normal again?
Well, like a lot of times when we're dealing with knee injuries and ankle injuries that have ligament damage, we'll put braces on those and expect for, in his case, as the end of the year comes around, I'll bet you he's out there playing in a brace so that he's protecting that. His legs are the primary issue here, and so he'll be able to do a lot of what he normally does, but he'll be a different guy for a while, and it'll take him probably a good 6-8 months to get that thing feeling like it can really absorb the stresses that he's used to having it do.
Dr. Doug, thanks for a few minutes today.
You bet. Take care, Chris, and good clairvoyance.
Big thanks to Dr. Doug Tavis, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. A quick timeout. It's qualified for Nebraska Northern Illinois tickets shortly with Hail Varsity presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
Busy one tomorrow on Hail Varsity Radio. We'll get caught up with Gary Barnett, Blackshirt Husker NFLer, Jay Moore, Big Red Wrap-Up fame. Will be with us in studio tomorrow. We're working on a couple of other things. Brad Edwards was incredible talking Nebraska and some college football. Mike Babcock, phenomenal. Mike Shuhart, Shuey, the Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. And you got some fantasy thoughts there on David Johnson from Dr. Doug with Lincoln Orthopedic Center. How about Rick and your friends at Sauter Heyman, now offering 0% interest financing through 2020? How's that? Check out the extensive collection of both Earthmind and Pure Grown Diamonds. 1 carat diamonds available for only $99 down and just $99 a month. That's a deal. You got your holiday shopping handled. You got her birthday figured out. Or the anniversary gift. Maybe it's 10. Maybe it's 15. Hey, go see Rick. Zero interest down. Or I should say zero interest financing through 2020. $99 down, $99 a month. I tell you what, it'll be exactly what she wants. And be that hero to friends, to family. And Sauter Heyman voted best year after year. 12th and O downtown Lincoln, South Point Pavilion, Lincoln, or out west. Your friends with Sauter Heyman in Grand Island, SauterHeyman.com. Okay. Should we qualify, Danny?
Yep, we're ready to do it.
All right. Caller 9 and caller 10 qualify for Nebraska Northern Illinois tickets. Pair of tickets for you for Saturday. We'll give that away tomorrow, but qualify now. Also, Blur Party Passes, caller 9, caller 10 makes it happen. 466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. Caller 9, caller 10 qualifies right now for Nebraska Northern Illinois tickets and those Blur Party Passes. FS1's where you'll catch the game if you can't go, but we want to change that for you and to get you qualified now. The drawing tomorrow about this time, caller 9, caller 10, 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. So get in, be nice to Danny. Get qualified now. Okay, a programming note. We are on the road Friday, Miller Time Pub, inside the just tremendous Cornhusker Marriott, 4 to 6. Food and drink specials. Come get primed up for another weekend of Nebraska football at Miller Time. We're there 4 to 6. High Life Hour goes from 4 to 7. So some great drink specials, tremendous food, great TV setup. And what they got at the bar... How many times does your wife yell at you for eating chips? Maybe late at night, maybe instead of a you know, meal from the four food groups. You're eating chips on the couch. Well, now she can't yell at you because they've got some awesome chips, some kettle tasting things at the bar just for showing up at Miller Time. You can have a drink too. Be happy with that. Part of their High Life Hour, they have really good rates on draws or bottles. So we want to see you down there, Miller Time Pub, getting you ready for Nebraska Northern Illinois. Caller 9, caller 10 qualifies for those Nebraska Northern Illinois tickets and the Bloor Party Passes. Talk to you tomorrow. We'll find you at 4. Thanks to Danny. I'm Schmitty. Back with you tomorrow. Hail Varsity presented by the Nebraska Lottery.